Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Nurses and the AFL-CIO take OSHA to court. Biden's vaccine policy now before the U.S. Supreme Court. Chicago schools close over COVID. And today on the show, the Columbus Central Ohio building trades and the number two man in the AFL-CIO because it's our first Friday with Fred. Welcome to the Friday, January 7th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. Dorsey Hager is going to be our first guest on the show. Since this is the first Friday of the new month, the new year, he's going to run down three things. He's going to recap what they did over the holidays. Program called Christmas Cares Union Shares. Nice little rhyme there. I'll explain what happened there. We'll get into neutrality agreements. We always like those because when you have a neutrality agreement with a company, more often than not, you're going to see the union go in there and get a first contract. Labor education series. Boy, I talk a lot about this on the show. It's important that people know the history of organized labor and why we have a middle class today because of organized labor. Created the 8-hour day, pensions, vacations, paid sick time, health care. So can't wait to hear what that series is all about. Also, we have a skilled worker shortage. I want to thank the Iron Workers Impact website for calling attention to this. And even before the pandemic, a number of contractors had serious concerns about having enough skilled workers to fill open positions. And that's why we promote the apprenticeship programs on the show all the time. We need more people to get into those programs. Earn while you learn. Again, and you'll hear Dorsey Hager say this, it's a pathway to the middle class. Well, according to the latest data from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and this is their Commercial Construction Index, those concerns remain at chronically high levels and are leading to serious consequences. You know what's going on? Contractors are turning down projects because they don't have enough workers. A majority, we're talking 91% in this survey of contractors, report moderate to high levels of difficulty finding skilled labor. More telling is the fact that 62% of contractors report very high levels of difficulty finding skilled workers, which rose 7 points from the last quarter. Because of that, they have to turn down work. Projects, some of them, are just taking longer. They're becoming costlier. And they're just not taking on new projects. You know, the other problem is material shortage. We had the wood prices that skyrocketed, steel, roofing materials, and then tariffs. Nearly half of the contractors, 47%, said steel and aluminum tariffs will have a high to very high degree of impact on their business in the next 3 years. So we'll touch on that with Dorsey Hager. Fred Redmond, number two man in the AFL-CIO, now the secretary treasurer, longtime steel worker, started in steel in 1973, 49 years ago. And when Rich Trumka passed in August, Liz Shuler, who was secretary treasurer, moved up to the presidency. She's up for, I believe, in June when they're going to vote on a full 4-year term for her. And then they nominated Fred Redmond to take the number two slot. He is going to give us an update on the Build Back Better bill. And the timing is very, very good right now because, well, you know what happened yesterday, the commemoration of the first anniversary of the insurrection. In fact, Liz Shuler released this statement. We're not powerless. The lesson of the January 6th attack cannot be forgotten. The very people who witnessed firsthand our democracy under assault now have the opportunity to strengthen our system of government, not weaken it. Congress must pass the John R. Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act of 2021 and the Freedom to Vote Act to protect the right of every American to cast our vote and to have that vote counted so that every eligible voter has a say in who represents them. Liz went on to say, if we learned anything from that day a year ago, it is that democracy is fragile and must be protected. Our 12.5 million members are motivated. We are mobilizing and we're organizing to hold our elected officials accountable to defend voting rights and democracy for all. And that's exactly what Fred is going to pick up on. And like I said, the timing is perfect because next weekend is the 2022 AFL-CIO Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Civil and Human Rights Conference. How many times Dr. King said voting rights, civil rights, they're interconnected. And that's what they discuss in these meetings. This will be virtual because of the pandemic. It's going to run from January 16th through the 17th. The theme of the conference, honoring our past and protecting our future. You can get more on this if you go to the AFL-CIO website, aflcio.org. All right. A group of America's largest nursing unions, along with the AFL-CIO, filed a lawsuit yesterday against OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, to compel the agency to issue a permanent standard that requires employers to protect healthcare workers from COVID-19 and to keep the emergency temporary standard in place until a permanent standard is issued. Just last week, OSHA announced that all of the non-record-keeping provisions of the healthcare emergency temporary standard would be expiring. And this comes despite the surge of infections. The timing is just not right on this. The Center for Disease Control and Prevention reported that 803,454 healthcare workers contracted COVID-19 and 3,063 have died as of December 30th, 2021. So you know it's more. The petitioners include National Nurses United, the AFL-CIO, the American Federation of Teachers, AFSCME, as well as some of the nation's other major unions, including the New York State Nurses Association and the Pennsylvania Association of Staff Nurses and Allied Professionals. So this has to be a bit uncomfortable. You know, labor is friendly with the Biden administration, but when there's a problem, you got to take them on. Now, there's a big court case happening today. Supreme Court case with over 100,000 Americans hospitalized for COVID-19 as a result of the Omicron variant. The Supreme Court will today hear oral arguments in two sets of challenges to the Biden administration's authority to take action to combat the pandemic. In the first case, National Federation of Independent Business versus the Department of Labor, the justices will consider the Biden administration's attempt to impose a vaccine or test mandate for workers at large employers. I believe it's like 100 or more. If you have 100 more workers, you're mandated. In the second case, which is titled Biden versus Missouri, they will consider a vaccine mandate for healthcare workers at facilities that receive federal funding, like Medicare. The vaccine disputes came to the court last month on an emergency basis, a procedural posture in which the justices might have generally been inclined to dispose of them with a brief order without hearing an argument. But the justices instead opted to fast-track the cases for oral argument today on whether the mandates can remain in place while challenges to their legality continue in the lower courts. This, by the way, is the third time this term that the justices move highly charged and time-sensitive issues off the so-called shadow docket and onto the merits docket for a full briefing and argument. Issued by the Occupational Safety and Health Administration on November 5th, the vaccine or test mandate requires all employers with 100 or more employees, approximately two-thirds of the private sector, mind you, to mandate that those employees either be fully vaccinated against COVID-19 or be tested weekly and wear masks at work. Several challenges were filed around the country and eventually consolidated in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit, which reinstated the mandate after another court put it on hold. So all eyes will be on the U.S. Supreme Court today. Again, two cases. Now, legal experts are saying it's hard to figure out what the court's going to do. We have a conservative court. But with the Medicare funding, the government can control the rules of the game. So that mandate might go on. We'll see. We'll see. In the meantime, as the latest COVID-19 wave leads to record high spikes in cases, the Chicago Public Schools, the third largest public school system in the country, is now entering day number three of canceled classes due to a labor dispute regarding classroom safety. On Tuesday evening, the Chicago Teachers Union voted to stop in-person education and move to remote instruction at all Chicago public schools. Now, in a statement, the union stated that while both teachers and educators would prefer to be in the classroom, the mayor's policies endanger, quote, the safety and vibrancy of our students and their educators. The union also raised concerns regarding testing and staffing. The decision in favor of remote learning, supported by 73% of the union's members, prompted the school system to cancel classes on Wednesday. Following the announcement around 11 p.m. on Tuesday, parents scrambled to locate childcare once more, only 2 days after the winter break ended. Now, the mayor opposed the union's decision, so the classes were canceled again yesterday as well as today, as the union and the school system failed to reach an agreement. Meanwhile, the Biden administration has supported in-person education and stated schools can be open safely. However, calls for remote education may continue to grow as Union Public Schools in Tulsa, Oklahoma, announced on Wednesday that classes will move online. And the New York City Teachers Union has also suggested a return to virtual learning. And in another COVID-19 related labor dispute on Wednesday, employees at the only company-owned unionized Starbucks, that's the one in Buffalo, they staged a walkout extending through the end of the week. According to one employee, the store had unsafe working conditions as understaffed employees struggled to enforce masking conditions, and then one employee tested positive for the virus. All right, we're going to take a break. Dorsey Hager on behalf of the building trades in Columbus, coming up next.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective Democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast, AWF Union Podcast. Doesn't look like we're going to get Dorsey Hager on the show today. I just got a text that something has come up in the Central Ohio area. Dorsey, of course, is the executive director of the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council. In fact, I was just talking about the shortage of skilled workers. He might be on a job somewhere because they need workers, and there's a lot of work in Central Ohio. ColumbusConstruction.org, and you could check him out on Twitter at BuildCentralOH. And he might join us at the end of the show. We got Fred Redmond coming up in about 10 minutes. Fred is the Secretary Treasurer of the AFL-CIO. Yesterday on the show, we had Hugh Giordano. Hugh's the Assistant Director of Organizing on behalf of the Food and Commercial Workers. That would be Local 152. Out of New Jersey, and they cover four states. They got 14,000 members, and he has done a bang-up job organizing. If you get an opportunity, just go to, we have all the different platforms for the show, but awfradio.com is where we archive all the shows, and he gave a really, really good explanation on how difficult it is to organize, especially in right-to-work states. But it was really riveting, and in a nutshell, you got to have a thick skin. You got to have a thick skin if you want to organize, because employers will throw everything, including the kitchen sink, at you. And do check out that show. And I want to salute the food and commercial workers out of Washington, D.C. Check this out. Workers at bookstores and cafes across the country are joining together to have a collective voice on the job. The employees at Washington, D.C.'s Politics and Prose are among a growing number of these workers forming unions, having received voluntary recognition late last week from their employer. The new members of United Food and Commercial Workers Local 400 are the first workers at a bookstore in the nation's capital to create a union. Got a quote here from the organizing committee. They call themselves the Politics and Prose Workers Union Organizing Committee. No names, just the committee. And they say the following: we are proud to join the growing movement of booksellers and baristas around the country who have unionized their workplaces. Forming our union has not only served as an affirmation of our shared values within the politics and prose community, it will also strengthen our workplace and ensure the long-term success of our beloved community hub. We look forward to negotiating our first contract and welcoming more bookstore workers in D.C. and beyond into our union family. So congratulations to the workers at Politics and Prose, new members of UFCW Local 400. Again, first workers at a bookstore in the nation's capital. We're going to see more and more of that. And that's what we talked about with Hugh on the show, because so many workers are quitting their jobs and saying, you know what, enough is enough. The U.S. Department of Labor and the National Labor Relations Board announced yesterday that the department's wage and hour division and the NLRB have signed a memorandum of understanding, strengthening the agency's partnership and outlining procedures and information sharing, joint investigations and enforcement activity, as well as training, education, and community outreach. The agreement is an effort by the agencies to improve the enforcement process of the laws they administer and reaffirms their commitment to ensure the rights and protections of workers. The partnership will help ensure that employers pay workers their rightful wages and that workers can take collective action to improve their working conditions without fear of retaliation. As it should be. Workers across this nation, this is a quote from Jessica Luman. She's the acting wage and hour division administrator. Workers across the nation put food on our tables, keep our families well, and our neighborhoods safe. In return, they deserve equity. They deserve fair pay and our respect. The wage and hour division works tirelessly to ensure workers receive their hard-earned wages and job-protected leave without fear of harassment and retaliation. Collaborating with the National Labor Relations Board will expand both of our agency's impact and effectiveness in restoring workplace protections and combating misclassification and preventing retaliation against them. Boy, the misclassification is huge. Huge. The division and the NLRB's collaboration will strengthen their interagency relationship by creating mechanisms to share information efficiently and establish a process for referral, joint investigation, and cross-training of personnel. The agreement will also allow for better enforcement against unlawful pay practices, misclassification of workers as independent contractors, and retaliation against workers who exercise their legal rights. All too often, workers face adverse action for speaking out about their compensation, whether it's discussing their wages, fighting back against wage theft, or advocating for higher wages. The National Labor Relations Act makes it illegal for employers to interfere with or retaliate against workers for taking these actions. That was said by Jennifer Abruzzo. Jennifer, longtime union lawyer. She worked with the CWA for many, many years, and she is now the general counsel of the National Labor Relations Board. Jennifer went on to say, these issues frequently cut across multiple worker protection agencies, which is why it is so important to work together and prevent and address these issues. In addition to enhanced enforcement, the agencies will use the partnership to increase the public's understanding of the laws enforced by the Wage and Hour Division and the National Labor Relations Board through increased community outreach, shared compliance materials, joint presentations, and training events. Talk about an active U.S. Labor Department and an NLRB. All about workers. That's what it is. All about workers. I want to highlight a worker here, and this is a courtesy of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. And this is a story about Anne Marie Clark Borden. Anne Marie Clark Borden is the carpenter foreperson at the Boston Public Library, where she leads a three-person team in maintaining all 26 branches of the public library. That's a lot of work. That's a lot of work. And the story goes as follows. She doesn't stop at fixing doors. She's opening them. Let's listen here on America's Workforce.
Adversity is something that tries to tear you down. It's the fact that I'm a woman. It's the fact that I'm Black. And so the adversity just is that of, you can't do it. My name is Anne Marie Clark Borden, and I am the carpenter foreperson for the Boston Public Library. We maintain the upkeep of 26 branches of the Boston Public Library. That entails anything from flooring to door locks to bookshelves to furniture. I'm the first woman foreperson in 100 years of the Boston Public Library. And so the Boston Public Library is trying very hard to make sure that they're in position to not only be appropriate, but also acknowledge people for who they are. And so they wanted to acknowledge me for who I am. And so instead of four man, they changed it to four person. So I have an 18-year-old daughter, and her name is Jabria. And she has decided recently to also go into the field of carpentry.
All throughout high school, I was in the engineering program, and I realized that the construction part of engineering was really what I wanted to do. My mom played a very big part in letting me know that there are different avenues to success. I feel as though she's set the bar very high, and she's also shown people that it is possible for other positions that people may want to be in that they're not open to because it hasn't been done.
The best part though is when she comes home and says, I love it. You know, it's one thing to inspire, it's another thing to know that she's building a foundation for her own life.
If there was something that I would say to my mom, it would honestly just be thank you for the position she's put me in to be successful, the information that she's given me all throughout my life. She's just amazing, and she's given me more than I can ask for.
So in the construction fields, there are non-union workers, and I was that for my entire construction site tenure, so to speak. I didn't have a union backing me. I didn't feel safe or secure. And to be able to have that is an amazing feeling.
Anne-Marie speaks her mind. She's very upfront about being a woman, about being a Black woman, and what it means in the United States, what it means in our library and our union. And I am really grateful that in addition to doing her job well and doing her union work well, she speaks her mind and makes sure that we are truly an equitable place, not just in words, but in deeds.
I've been a part of the community forever, and I do think that it's important that, you know, something may not be for me, but it may be for someone else. And that's the part I think I'd change it from speaking for people to, you know, giving people the feeling and understanding, again, that they're not alone. It should be collectively, like we are all in this world together. You know, we don't all have to like each other or talk to each other, but at the same time, we're all connected in some way, shape, or form. And so if I can help in any way surrounding that, I'm here for it.
Anne-Marie Clark Borden is a trailblazer. She has broken down racial and gender barriers to assume a leadership role in public service. She never quit strengthening the Boston Public Library. She never quits standing up for herself, and she never quits empowering others. Anne-Marie's strength and persistence have made her a role model for her daughter and for all of us. There are incredible people like Anne-Marie in all our communities. If you work with someone like her, please go to this website and nominate them for a Never Quit Service Award.
Again, that clip is courtesy of our friends at the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, better known as AFSCME. The story about Anne-Marie Clark Borden, carpenter foreperson at the Boston Public Library, where she maintains all 26 branches. Amazing lady. Amazing. All right, we're going to break. When we come back, it's the First Friday with Fred. Fred Redmond, Secretary Treasurer of the AFL-CIO.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans. And we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers. And we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at AFL.com.
AFGE.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
Buildings, bridges, skyscrapers, and more. Structures that are the face of our cities and towns were built by members of the Ironworkers Union. That's why it's important that our workforce of over 130,000 ironworkers continues to be the safest and best trained in the field. With 154 training centers, we invest over $90 million annually in safety and training. We're growing the next generation of union ironworkers. There are so many reasons to put your trust in our ironworkers and their employers. Learn more about us at ironworkers.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, we're available on 6 platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We always like those 5-star ratings, so keep them coming. Also, want to mention that this next segment brought to you in part by the North Coast Labor Federation, all connected to the AFL-CIO. And speaking of which, let's go to line number one. And this is Friday, January 7th, and we started this a couple months ago. I call it the first Friday with Fred. Fred is Fred Redman, who is now the Secretary Treasurer of the AFL-CIO, proud sponsor of America's Workforce. Fred, welcome back and Happy New Year to you, brother.
Well, thank you, Flash. Happy New Year's to you and all your listeners.
You had a good holiday? How did everything go for you?
Well, I did. I spent some time with my kids and grandkids, which is always a good thing. And, no, we had a good time. Very relaxing, and, you know, it was good to be with the family and get back into reality for a little while.
Yeah, and we should point out, too, that Fred is doing the show today from his home, which is a rarity. He's usually on the road.
Yeah.
And weren't you stuck in the airport the other day for how many hours? What happened?
Oh, wow. I was in JFK Airport Tuesday for 9 hours.
Oh!
9 hours, yeah. Finally, had to get on another flight because the flight I was supposed to be on going into Norfolk, Virginia, the plane never showed up. It was stranded somewhere in the snow. So it was an event. It was one of those things that make you realize that, you know, traveling is necessary, but it's definitely not glamorous, you know.
No. And consider the people that got stuck on I-95 for, what was it, like 27 hours or something like that?
Yeah, it was terrible. I had some staff who was headed down to Newport News that got stuck. And, you know, one of my staff told me it took him 4 hours to get 6 miles. And he finally came off and threw the towel in and said, forget it, this isn't going to work. But what I hear, there's a lot of trucks that jackknife. And, you know, look, it really shows us that global warming is real. You know, we have to take this stuff serious. But, yeah, I-95 was, you know, that was a very serious event. I believe the whole system got shut down on 95 at some point.
Fred, talk to me about Newport News. I know these negotiations have been very, very difficult. Many times that we've had you on the show in the past couple of months, you were in the middle of them. Now, what's the latest here? I'm understanding there was a contract that they gave the members. They didn't vote on. They didn't approve it. What's the latest on that, Fred?
Well, we negotiated an agreement. We presented it to the members. I believe it was November the 15th. And the members voted on it that following week after we had an explanation meeting. And look, first of all, Newport News is the largest manufacturer of aircraft carriers. You know, they have one customer, that's the U.S. Navy, and they provide the Navy with this fleet of aircraft carriers. We're proud of the fact of the work that our members do. We represent over 10,000 employees at Newport News. And these folks, you know, they defend their country. They make world-class aircraft carriers. The USS Nimitz came out of Newport News shipbuilding. The John F. Kennedy, which is one of the recent aircraft carriers that was put in the Navy's fleet, was produced at Newport News. And our folks is world-class shipbuilders. So anyway, we went into a negotiations. We got to a tentative agreement. Look, some of the things in the agreement we thought was good. Some of the things we thought in the agreement could have been better, but we presented it to our members. And I just want you and your listeners to keep in mind, you know, these members worked throughout the pandemic. We've had over 2,000 cases of COVID over an 18-month period starting in March of 2020. That over 2,000 cases was reported. But these members persevered because they understand that the work that they do is important to defending our country. But anyway, we reached an agreement. We presented it to the members, and the members felt as though it did not reflect the wealth that they create for Huntington Ingalls, and it did. And the agreement, in their opinion, did not reflect what they felt should have been appreciation for the work that they'd done during COVID, and did not reflect their ability as the greatest shipbuilders in the world. So the contract was rejected, and we took a break over the Christmas holidays to talk to our folks and to try to find out some of the issues that was concerning to them. And this week I met with the committee. We've put together another proposal, which I sent to the company, as a matter of fact, this morning, and hope to meet with the company within the next week to see if we can bring this thing to a conclusion. In the meantime, we're working without a contract on a day-to-day extension, and our people want to put this behind them, but, you know, we're preparing to do what's necessary to make sure that, you know, our folks is recognized in a way that recognize their skills and abilities. So that's where we're at. And hopefully, you know, we can get this done. But it's up to the will of Huntington Ingalls. I mean, we're talking about a company that has been very generous to their shareholders. We're talking about a company that got billions of dollars worth of government appropriations in their pipeline. And our people are anxious to, you know, meet the commitment and do that work, but they want to be treated with respect, and they want to be recognized for the work that they do.
That's what it's all about. Well, I was reading on the AFL-CIO website last month. They got you going all over the country. Stoneway Concrete, which is in the Seattle area, and the Teamsters there. That would be Local 174. They walked off the job the beginning of December, and I know you went to the picket line. Man, what was that like? I mean, can you explain that one?
It was, I mean, you know, Stoneway is a place. They actually have 9 locations in the Seattle area. And the Teamsters, you know, they drive these cement trucks, and they report to construction sites, and they, you know, deliver the cement that's, you know, that's necessary in order to do particularly heavy highway construction. These folks went into negotiations. The company put a draconian health care proposal on the table that was going to eat up a very large portion of their wages. And then the company wanted to change their pension plan to go from a Taft-Hartley defined pension benefit plan to a 401k. So these are folks who said, look, enough is enough. This company is very profitable. You know, the anticipation of the money that they're going to make and the contracts that they're going to get with the infrastructure bill, they'll be major producers of cement for those projects that's going to come out of the bill, you know, but they didn't consider sharing some of that with the workers, with the Teamsters workers in Seattle. So they decided to withhold their labor. It was interesting because they have 9 facilities in Seattle, and they have they've been maintaining picket lines at each one of those locations. So I was in Seattle meeting with our AFL-CIO State Federation and our Central Labor Councils, and I was invited and really enjoyed spending some time with those courageous workers on the picket lines.
Well, Teamsters are proud sponsors of this show, so we'll reach out to them. That's Local 174 out of Seattle.
Yeah, 174. And, you know, these are you know, it's a very committed group of people who, you know, really they just want the company, they want this particular company just do the right thing.
Yeah.
And the Teamsters have been very, very instrumental, you know, in all the strikes that have taken place throughout this country over the past, particularly the past year. You know, they have in their contracts, Flash, that they will not cross union organized picket lines, and they've been true to that. You know, and they're very, very essential when it comes to work stoppages because mm-hmm. they make sure that their members support AFL-CIO sponsored strikes. And so we're fully in support of their efforts in Seattle, and it's just a great group of trade unionists.
Good to hear. Tough bunch, no doubt about it. Fred, I got to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about the Build Back Better bill, also voting rights legislation. It's important that we make sure that that happens and changing some Senate rules. Fred Redmond, number two man in the AFL-CIO, Secretary Treasurer. He'll be back right after this.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialists, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to AFLCIO.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. Let's go back to our live line and rejoin Fred Redmond, Secretary Treasurer of the AFL-CIO. Fred, I want to talk about what lies ahead here in Congress. Also,
sure.
I know the AFL-CIO is commemorating Dr. King a week from today. They're going to do that virtually. But this all intertwines with each other. Dr. King said so many times, civil rights, voting rights. And from what I'm reading, Chuck Schumer, the Senate Majority Leader, is talking about maybe changing some Senate rules so we can enact some good voting legislation. Fred, what do you know about that?
Well, the filibuster that Leader Schumer is talking about, you know, has been a serious impediment toward trying to pass progressive and fair legislation to try to move this country forward. You know, the filibuster as it stands today is not the filibuster that was created that would require a representative, a member of the Senate, to actually take the floor in unlimited debate to try to convince his colleagues on an important piece of legislation. And, you know, we all remember the famous movie, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, and how he stood on the Senate floor for 24 hours. And now you could, you know, I mean, now you could, you know, hold up a bill by just declaring, you know.
Sure.
A filibuster. But anyway, it's a bill that I think the Democrats have, the party that's in majority have enjoyed over the years. The Democrats have, enjoyed the filibuster that calls for 60 votes in order to pass a piece of legislation that's not directly related to the budget. The Republicans have enjoyed it also. But we're in a situation now where things is not being dealt with from a legislative perspective. But, I would argue that what's happening in the Senate today is very destructive towards democracy. So voting and the right to vote, the Voting Rights Act, these are sacred instruments that build democracy in this country. And like you said, Dr. King's, said that the two, in terms of civil rights and voting rights, they're interconnectedly, entwined with each other, because you can't have civil rights, you can't have human rights. You just don't have rights as a citizen if you're not able to participate in the franchise of electing your representatives. So what we're seeing is a lot of bills that's being pushed in states around this country that's going to hamper people's rights to vote. There's bills that's really, really changing the landscape in terms of mail-in voting, in terms of requiring certain pieces of ID to be presented in order to vote. We see gerrymandering. We see people being purged from the rolls. So there's two particular bills that's pending right now. The John R. Lewis Voting Rights Bill, which is House Bill number 4, and then the Freedom to Vote Act, which is Senate Bill 2747. And both of these bills will put federal restrictions, on states to prevent them from changing the voting in this country and changing people's and making it more difficult for people to exercise the right to vote. In Senate Bill 2747, the Freedom to Vote Act, what it literally does is restore the provisions of the Voting Rights Act, that was stripped. It restores issues like preclearance, where states just can't arbitrarily change the rules, particularly states that participated in voting restrictions during the period of Reconstruction. So, we're trying to do everything that we can to get these pieces of legislation passed in order to save our democracy. And the foundation of democracy is the right to vote. So this is so critical towards saving democracy that what Leader Schumer is saying is to change the rules, to eliminate the filibuster to a simple majority, really trying to get some legislation passed to stop these states from infringing upon people's rights to vote. So the elimination of the filibuster will allow this to pass by a simple majority. And, we'll see what's happening. I mean, there's a lot of support for eliminating the filibuster. It's always been a good thing to have bipartisan legislation, Flash. The Civil Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act, was passed in a bipartisan Congress, and Senate, during that period of time of the 60s, because, to have cooperation when it comes to democracy is a good thing, okay? But with this Senate, it don't seem to be happening. People are more concerned about protecting the feelings of one individual, and I'm referring to the former President of the United States, as opposed to protecting democracy. And it's a, it's an indictment in terms of where we're at, in this country. But there don't seem to be any sort of bipartisan move toward trying to protect the right to vote. So what Senator Schumer is saying is that the right to vote is so critical toward restoring and maintaining a democracy here in the United States, that if we have to eliminate the filibuster to get it done, then you know, Leader Schumer has put that on the table as an alternative if we can't get cooperation in terms of trying to protect the right to vote.
So, Fred, what you're saying, there's two things at play. Number one, we got to eliminate the filibuster, all right?
Right.
Okay, so we eliminate the filibuster. Say that's done. We got to get 50 Democrats on board. Do we have 50 Democrats on this?
Well, we'll see. I mean, you know, we got two representatives, and there's nothing, you know, it's no reason for us not to call their names. You know, we're looking at Senator Manchin from West Virginia and Senator Sinema from Arizona, and, you know, they have not committed publicly to supporting voting rights. Senator Manchin has indicated that he's interested in a bill to protect voting rights, but he has refused to be a co-sponsor of the legislation this, you know, up to now. So, you know, we'll see. But, you know, we think that there's some momentum, you know, toward this issue of protecting voting rights. From what we hear, you know, a lot of our Republicans friends across the aisle are privately saying in conversations to some of the their Democratic colleagues is that, you know, look, we don't, you know, they're worried about getting primaried. They're worried about the ex-president, you know, challenging them and their future elections. But and that's not helpful. I mean, that's not helpful what we're trying to accomplish here. But we feel as though the wind, you know, the momentum is at our backs, okay, on this particular piece of legislation. And, you know, our hope is that Senator Manchin and Senator Sinema will come around and, you know, vote for this piece of critical legislation. It's all about protecting our democracy. It's all about protecting the sacred right to vote. And what we have to do is continue to put pressure on Senator Sinema and Manchin, which we're doing. I mean, you know, we're flooding their office with phone calls. We're visiting their legislative office in the districts throughout their states. And we're just, you know, putting together four court press, and not just the labor movement, but, you know, progressive movements, civil rights movements around this country, because this is so critical. But eliminating the filibuster is a tactic that we would encourage, and Leader Schumer has indicated that he would consider, okay, if there appears to be not enough votes to get this passed and our Republican friends will not come along and protect this democracy.
Amen to that, brother. We have to protect the right to vote. If you don't protect the right to vote, you're not protecting democracy. I mean, it's
Absolutely.
As simple as that. Simple as that. Okay, my brother, you take care. Next month, when we check in with you, maybe we'll have an update on the Build Back Better. That's another one that Manchin is a stickler on. But, you know, it's never a straight line. You know that, Fred.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's never a straight line. But, look, the fight continues. You know, we're feeling good about where we're at right now. We got a lot of work to do in this upcoming year, but the labor movement is focused. We're committed to not only protecting our democracy, but also to get the Build Back Better bill passed and to improve lives for working people.
We'll leave it on that note. Fred, you take care. We'll talk to you next month, okay?
Okay. Thanks, Flash.
Fred Redmond, Secretary Treasurer of the AFL-CIO. That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up on Monday, the American Federation of Musicians and the latest from the Better Business Bureau. Until then, all of you, have a safe and wonderful weekend.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.